welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for December 16th. It's the final one of the year. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. Of course, how you doing, buddy, on this freezing cold Saturday morning?
It's freezing cold. It's nice and toasty in here.
Six degrees.
Japan Baseball Weekly Annex. I'm here. I'm chilling. I'm having a good time with my buddy John on the internet here.
Yeah.
So...
yeah, it was about 6 degrees centigrade outside for...
Is it?
Yeah.
You went outside and ran.
Yeah.
I was in bed.
Yeah. I only had 4 layers of stuff on the top, like jackets and sweatshirts and body armor. And then I had the long tights and I didn't go 2 pairs of gloves today, but I went with one and neck warmer and everything, man. It was all out for the winter today.
You looked like one of those guys who do in the sumo suits. Kids in the little element, their little preschool jumpers there that are, they look like little basketballs with arms and legs.
I should have looked really scary all dressed in black with these bright yellow shoes, but it wasn't enough to get people out of my way.
Well, now you're still invisible.
Still invisible.
You got your cloaking device on.
Well, it's working. Final show of the year, we have a chat with NPB tracker Patrick Newman, and we're going to talk about the posting system and touch on a couple other topics, so let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so Patrick Newman, the NPB tracker, joined the discussion this week, and it was a real privilege to have him on the show. Now, Patrick lived in Japan from 2000 to 2003, and he said he got hooked on Japanese baseball from the first moment he saw it. And I think that's the story for a lot of us. It certainly is for me. And he started NPB Tracker in 2008 after noticing the plethora of erroneous reports and misinformation about Japanese baseball in North America in the media.
Plethora? Hold on a second. Plethora, erroneous misinformation. Wow, this is like you're starting to go government on me, John.
Oh, government. Well, you know, I can...
Big words.
Well, what I was going to say was, yeah, and... even though NPB Tracker is out there, even though you and Jason Koskri and I, you know, to a certain extent, are out there working as hard as we can, the misinformation and erroneous reports are spreading like wildfire.
I know. Well, that's because now we had the report, the great report in one of the New York papers, and I don't know which it was, who said that Masahiro Tanaka frequently comes out of the bullpen after on zero rest or one day's rest to pitch in relief. And yeah, he did it 3 times this year.
Frequently in the postseason.
He's done it 3 times in his career.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it hasn't gotten any better since Hideki Matsui went to America, and some American writer documenting his first season said he and Ichiro Suzuki had played against each other once before in an exhibition known as the Japan Series.
In an exhibition. Wow. It's not misinformation. It's disinformation. Disrespecting.
Oh, man, you got that right. Well, anyway, the flow of information, it's sort of like somebody, you know, we're trying to control the quality, but you can't. You know, it's the internet. There's no quality controls. And there's, unfortunately, no volume controls. We're putting out, the faster we put out this stuff, the more misinformation gets published because people think they know everything,
exactly.
Which is my problem as well.
Well, we will not give up the fight.
No way. We're not going to win it either, but we're not
going to give up. Yeah. We might not lose either. Settle for a 12-inning tie.
Well said.
All right, so now Patrick follows NPB online because he lives in San Francisco, but as I understand it, he's the mastermind behind your amazing baseball database, or he helps you capture some of the data from online sites. How's that work?
Well, what he did was he developed a script that allowed him to capture the data from basically the facts that are published all over the internet, and compile them in one usable database, and compile them and import them into databases that he made public. And Michael Westbay and I had been struggling with this topic for years and years. Michael Westbay is here in Japan, and Michael Westbay is the brains behind a lot of positive things going on in the internet. What Patrick did was he was capturing stuff from the internet. Michael Westbay was capturing stuff from the internet. I was capturing stuff from the internet, but we were all going about it in different ways. But Patrick had these very, very elegant scripts that Michael adopted. And last year, Michael, or 2 years ago, Michael showed me Patrick's scripts. And what they did was they allowed me to get stuff off the internet instead of spending 30 minutes every morning typing in websites, numbers. His scripts allowed me to download all the files I wanted in seconds.
All right. So all you guys are computer geniuses as well. So that's great. I'm not throwing you in there per se, but I...
I'm the Neanderthal in the group. I'm sort of banging. I guess I got axe heads here.
Well, compared to you guys, I'm Fred Flintstone writing on a stone. So let's take a listen to the discussion that we had about a few topics with Patrick from San Francisco. We are very pleased this week to be joined by Patrick Newman. He is known as the NPB Tracker. He tweets, he writes, he does stats on Japanese baseball. Thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, yeah, it's a great pleasure. Great pleasure to talk to you again.
Likewise.
And at some point, we want to meet, and you owe me a drink because my Kings beat your Sharks last year.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Oh, I haven't forgotten.
I was glad they're your Sharks and not mine.
Maybe we go double or nothing in the playoffs this year.
But no, we're not in the playoffs!
I'm taking my drink, and then we can bet again. How's that?
Yeah, all right. That's fair enough. Whether it's in California or Tokyo, either way.
All right. Well, we're having you on the show because you're very knowledgeable, obviously, about Japanese baseball. You've been doing sabermetrics and taking stats or looking at the stats for quite a while. And on this particular show, we're going to cover a few topics, but one of the topics is the number or the foreign players who are coming over from either the States or wherever they're coming over and what you might see them doing in the upcoming season. What do you have for us?
Well, so this year, I think the big difference that I've noticed is that there's not a lot of new guys coming in, at least not yet. We're seeing a lot of migration around MPB from, you know, established players going from one team to another, like Lee Dai-ho and Standridge and Valderas will probably move on to another team and Herman. So I think the only notable bat that I can think of is Mauro Gomez joining Hanshin. And then Hanshin finally got a closer from Korea.
Right.
I think Oh is the guy that I'm looking forward to seeing the most because I haven't seen a lot of him in the past. Gomez, I think, is going to be a good pickup for Hanshin because he had such good power numbers in the AAA league that is not the PCL. The name is escaping me, but, guys that hit well in that league tend to fare a little bit better. So, and I'm looking forward to seeing what Rakuten does, you know, whether, they acquire a new starting pitcher to replace Tanaka, whether they need a new bat to replace McGee. And what they do, you know, with the changes that are coming to the roster.
Yeah, they're definitely going to need some more stuff. I'm curious too in Oh, the Korean stopper, because this guy's got tremendous numbers. He's the all-time South Korean or KBO saves leader and he's coming over. And I got to look at some of his highlights and he's a big, strong guy. He's different from the two dominating or premier closers I've seen come over in the past 15, 20 years. And one of them was Son Dong-yeol, who pitched with the Chunichi Dragons later, and then Lee Myung-chang, who pitched with the Swallows up until recently. And he's built much differently from these guys. He's a big, strong guy. Have you seen him pitch, or have you just looked at his numbers?
No, just I've seen the same video clips as you have. And I was he on the WBC team in 2013? I can't even remember. I guess Korea wasn't really in position to use their closer in any of the games that I saw. So
yeah,
just little.
Well, I think he pitched. He might have been on 2009 on the team, but
so that for me, that's part of the intrigue is just seeing a guy that I haven't seen before.
Right.
And Hanshin, you know, I think Hanshin dropped the ball in their relief situation last year because they knew for years that Kyuji wanted to go to the majors. And it was like the worst kept secret in all of baseball.
It was no secret.
It wasn't a secret. He was painted on billboards outside of Hanshin's office.
Yeah, I think
they still failed to see it.
Instead of his name on the back of his jersey, he had it said, "Don't use me too much."
Well, he didn't get his wish.
Now his jersey says, "When's my surgery?"
Yeah. And will you post me before then?
And also, I hate rehab.
So, you know, Hanshin had years to you know, figure out a contingency plan or a succession plan, and they didn't do it. And they were kind of, oh no, we need a closer, really? It's interesting to see them go to Korea for that, and I'm looking forward to seeing how he does.
Yeah, it is interesting that they're doing that, and I thought that they felt like they were going to have guys within the system that who they were going to be able to promote and get work into that role, and it just didn't happen, and they ended up getting Kubo, and that was not a pretty thing.
Kubo was an absolute steal from Lotte when they got him.
Oh, sure.
Right.
And they got him for a kind of junk left-hander. I can't even remember his name.
Oh, Hashimoto.
Hashimoto, was that it?
Hashimoto is one of these guys who I really like because he's really good in the minors, but he is, he's just never made the adjustment. He's one of these guys who just, as soon as he pitches at the top time, he doesn't, particularly perhaps because he's a reliever. And he's a guy I really like, but he's just never made it. And people say he's a coward, but which I doubt is true.
Yeah, that's a tough card to draw. But you know, Hashim got some good years out of Kubo as a starter. You know, it was a good deal at the time, but.
It was a steal.
Yes.
But as a starter, not really as the closer.
Not a closer.
Yeah, he fizzled out. And then, you know, Kobayashi never panned out when they got him as a free agent.
We'll see if
their scouting department has done their homework and if they've got a good guy here.
Now, you talked about guys like Esteban Germán and Jason Standridge, and I just don't see why their current teams or former teams is what it's going to look like, what it's looking like now. But, the Tigers are letting go of Standridge, and the Lions are letting go of Germán. And these guys didn't just produce. They were outstanding team leaders in terms of production. And I can't figure out why they're letting them go.
Yeah, I think, Japan has this weird way of valuing relief pitchers more than starters. There was a time when the highest paid pitchers were Iwase and Kyuji and Lim, and they're all closers. Whereas a starter gives you 200 innings is, you know, obviously has a lot of value. And Germán, I don't know why Cebu didn't just give him the extra year. Their infield is just totally decimated now.
Well, it's certainly going to be a mixed hodgepodge of guys. We thought, Nakamura, they just gave him a big contract yesterday. I'm assuming they feel like he can play somewhere, and I'm thinking it's going to be third base, but maybe they should just think and put him at first base because he won't get hurt. I don't know what they're thinking.
I don't know either.
They did want, you know, of course, as Patrick said, they did want Germán. They just wanted him on different terms. And
sign Balderas.
Pardon?
Maybe they'll sign Aaron Balderas.
They cannot because Yokohama has signed Balderas.
Oh, has that already happened?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm out of touch then.
I think it was yesterday. At least that was, I haven't seen the official announcement, but that has been the
second base. That's kind of a head scratcher too, because they have Blanco for first, and they have either Nori Nakamura or Tsutsugo for third.
I think they're giving up on Tsutsugo at third base.
Yeah, I think that's the answer. They're giving up on Tsutsugo.
And nobody.
I don't know what they're going to do with him.
Yeah.
And your guess is as good as mine, since the entire, if you could call it a brain trust, I think it might be a few points short of qualifying, but I think they've decided that, Nakamura is out of the picture and Tsutsugo is not going to cut it.
Yeah, I think they think Nori is just too old to play an entire season. He'll spot start, but he's not going to play the entire season. And Tsutsugo has just been an enigma. I mean, who can figure him out? I have no idea. I think they have no idea what they're going to get from him. He had a flash. He had some spots, but he has not been consistent. And last year was pretty much a total waste in terms of his career.
Just watching him, it's obvious that he's got power and he's got physical strength. But just watching him play, he chased so many bad pitches that are low in the zone that he couldn't drive. Mm-hmm. And if he just focused on swinging at pitches that are waist level or above, I think that you'd see much better results from him. But for whatever reason, that message hasn't gotten through. But, NA's player development and coaching staff is probably, you could fill an entire show with a, you know, critique of that, I guess. Mm.
All right, now let's move along. You talked about some players that you like in terms of what they bring to the game, not necessarily their production, but their personality, their flair, their showmanship. Why don't you talk about that first?
Yeah, so, you know, John, when you and I were exchanging emails on this, this kind of came up as a topic, so, you know, so the listeners, you know, get the context on this. And, you know, there's all these players like Ichiro and Darvish who are phenomenal and a lot of fun to watch, but then there's other guys that are more middling who are also fun. And my textbook example is ironically a Yokohama DeNA Bay Star, Daisuke Miura. Mm. And the story behind that is I first visited Japan as a foreign exchange student in the autumn of 2000, really late summer of 2000. Mm-hmm. And one of the first games that I saw on TV was a game that Yokohama was playing and Miura was pitching. And I don't remember who the opponent was, but, you know, I see this guy, Miura, and he goes to deliver his pitch, and he does this crazy motion where he brings his leg up and then down and then back up and then down again. And I'd never seen anything like that. It's like, I couldn't believe it was allowed.
not anymore, but yeah.
Wow, this is different. And, you know, and then you see things like the all-dirt infield and stuff like that. And these are things that, you know, I've been following Japanese baseball for 13 years now, and you guys have, you know, got some experience under your belts as well. And they're all commonplace now, but just thinking back to seeing that stuff for the first time as an American and seeing the differences, and guys like that really underscored, you know, what was fun about pro Yaku and what was different about it. So Daisuke Miura is mine. That's kind of my signature pro Yaku guy. He's kind of what defines what's different about Japanese baseball for me.
Now, what
interesting. You know, actually, I'm going to throw this in there because, John probably knows this, but, you know, throughout the last, not so much in the recent, the past couple of years, but Miura was for a stretch before Kuroda went to MLB. He and Kuroda were two of the best pitchers in the Central League. And this was largely masked by the teams they played for. And I think it's really odd. I think if Miura had been younger and had gone to the MLB, I think people would be saying what a great pitcher he is.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I look at him and you think he doesn't look his age. He doesn't pitch his age. He still throws fairly hard.
It's the pompadour, man.
Yeah. He still throws pretty hard, and he's been pretty effective these years. Where I thought, because remember when he became a free agent, I think it was 2006, 2005, 2006, somewhere around there, and he decided he wanted to stay with Yokohama, and everybody said, well, why? And he said, well, I don't want to just jump over the teams, up in the standings with, you know, from this team. I want to earn it. And we all thought, well, yeah, but you're coming to the end of your career, you know, and here it is. He's heading into the 2014 season. He's still pitching, and he's still a viable factor on that team.
Yeah. I was really disappointed a year or two ago, when Hiyama broke up his no-hitter in the ninth inning.
Mm.
Watching that game from here in California, and that at bat, I think it was with one out in the ninth.
Okay.
And Hiyama came up as a pinch hitter, and it was kind of like the battle of the veterans there.
Yeah.
Hiyama knew exactly what Daisuke was going to do, and he just battled him every step of the way, and I think he got him to a full count and then hit a double off the fence. And it just kind of deflated the game, but and then Daisuke apologized to the fans for not getting a no hitter.
Japanese.
I remember the apology. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's the guy that kind of symbolizes the fun, of pro Yaku for me.
Right. And you talked about, the fact that there have been some personalities out there like Shinjo, Hichori Morimoto, guys like that. And Munenori Kawasaki is probably one of the guys who now is spreading his cheer and revel all throughout the, Major League Baseball, or at least in the, upper eastmost corner and part of Canada. What do you think these guys with the personality add? Because it doesn't seem very Japanese if you've followed Japanese baseball for a while. It's the anti-Japanese kind of that.
You know, it doesn't mesh with the stereotype of, like, you know, the Japanese businessman who wears a suit and sleeps on the train and all that stuff. Mm. So it's different. You know, but I think just in general, Japanese baseball is a little more down to earth and a little bit more accessible. And I think that that's kind of part of it, the whole fan service and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that I necessarily find it out of character with the culture of baseball in Japan, at least once you get out of the amateur ranks. You know, Koshien in college baseball is very serious business.
Mm.
But maybe that's sort of reflective of Japanese culture overall, because high school is such a grind in Japan.
Mm.
And I semester in college in Japan, and it was like the most laid back semester I had in all of my 4 years of college. I mean, it was just hanging out all day, basically.
Mm.
And so, you know, you get out of this serious, very intense period of your life and then just kick back in college. And maybe it's a bit like that in baseball too. Maybe these guys are just so, you know, so worked down to the bone and in the amateur ranks, and they get to the pros and they just want to cut loose a little bit. Maybe there's an element of that. I hadn't really thought about it before.
Hmm. Interesting.
Well, Japan's always had a few of these outliers, and they tend to be very popular because they do the things like, we've had these Niger Morgan type characters in Japan, Ichitori Morimoto and Shinjo and whatnot, and guys who really enjoyed who made a point of putting on a show. But they are still outliers. Everybody looks at them and, you know, and if they succeed, they're big stars, and if they don't succeed, they're yesterday's news. And of course, the biggest of those was Shigeo Nagashima, and he was very serious about his baseball, but he was also, you know, on the cutting edge of putting on a show at any time.
Yeah, and now his son only puts on shows. So
well, yeah. See, he got some of his dad's genes.
Yeah.
The showmanship.
Yeah, and do another show about the silliness of Nagashima as well.
Oh yeah.
we probably will end up doing a show like that. Okay, well, before we get you out of here and let you go, we did want to talk about the posting system real quick. And I did get to read your post about the brain. How do you title that?
Conversations with my brain about the posting system.
Wow. Okay, conversations with your brain. So it was very entertaining, very thoughtful, very insightful. Your thoughts about the posting system and how it's going to affect both sides. I guess there are three sides.
I'm glad it's coming to an end because I'm kind of sick of it. I guess you guys are
hurt. I hear you, man.
Yeah. I guess you guys are even more so than I am.
Well, you say coming to an end, and I did see a news program last night that said Atsushi Ihara, who's the Secretary General of MPB, came on and said, we haven't worked out all the details yet, and when we do, we're going to send a press release. And this has been a week after they basically have said that there's a basic agreement on the table. So there's still some hedging going on, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, you know, it's crossed my mind that Mikitani and Tachibana are in the winter meetings to try and get that $20 million limit moved up a bit. You know, I think just getting away from the story of Tanaka and what this means for him and everything, I think that I'd like to think about what it means for Japanese baseball, having a good, vibrant Japanese baseball culture and a good financially stable league. And I think that having a de jure limit on how much a baseball operation can benefit from successfully developing a player, it's kind of, it's anti-competitive. You know, it's against the idea of sport, I think. And I mean, one of my points in my blog post was that there's no limits on how much money major league teams can send to each other in these transactions. And Detroit sent $30 million to Texas to help undo their mistake on Prince Fielder's contract. So, you know, that's more than the posting limit right there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're not putting these limitations on each other. So, I don't really think it's good for Japanese baseball. I think it's really a rock in a hard place kind of situation. I don't really know what will be better. Well, I think I know it would be better, which would be just an open transfer window where teams can basically trade players to major league teams for money for whatever, for whatever fee they negotiate, and just let it be open and let it be a situation that works for the team and works for the player. This, I don't think really gets that much closer to that. So, Yeah, I'm not that crazy about the posting system.
Yeah, I think we've all been really frustrated. I think mostly from what I've gathered, some of the fans in the United States who had no idea what it was in the first place, and they just, especially Yankee fans and I think fans of teams that have a lot of money, Boston might be up there again. I wrote a blog post just yesterday, and I didn't include Boston in the running for Tanaka because I think they feel like Matsuzaka took enough of their money and that they're still probably leery about the whole situation in terms of paying a lot of money for a pitcher who's unproven. But yeah, I think we're all frustrated with the whole situation, and Jim and I are going to go on and talk about this now in the show, but you know, it's been frustrating. It still is because it's not completed, and hopefully things can get done and we can work out another system in the future. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like there's going to be the 2-year limit that the players had. The condition that the players had agreed to when they approved it.
Yeah, it looks like going to 3.
So,
I don't think anyone's going to really be that happy with the turn of events. But, you know, I will look forward to listening to what you guys have to say about it.
Well, it's a very good deal for most of the posted players because
it does help the majority cases. It really hurts the marquee cases.
Sure. It hurts the ones that make the money. It helps the ones where the team's just rewarding a guy for his service and saying, we don't care how much, you know, you get. We get. If we get $2 million, it's fine. If we get $3 million, it's fine. For those players, it's a boon because now you get Nakajima going to the States and there's 4 teams, you know, posting $3 million and he can sign with any of them. So we have situations like that. Iwakuma doesn't wait to become a free agent and so on. Anyway, okay. So.
All right, Patrick, well, thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule. It's early evening over there for you, but appreciate it. It's morning over here for us, and some of us have to go to work, so we got to get out of here.
What's that supposed to mean, Matt?
Some of us have to work in the morning.
Okay, fair enough.
But thank you very much for joining us. I look forward to your tweets. Always enjoy them, and thank you very much for coming on.
Yep, I will be back anytime you'd like to have me again.
Oh my gosh, you'll be a regular.
That would be fun. thank you for having me, and be careful what you wish for in that regard.
Oh, how true.
All right, take care.
Okay,
happy holidays. All right. Well, thank you very much again, Patrick. I know you're a busy guy, and it was a real pleasure, first of all. And although my team won that bet, the Kings and the Sharks, I have a real appreciation for what Joe Thornton brings to the game. So throwing hockey aside, you know, it was a real good conversation, I think. Again, the conversation with his brain about the posting system was quite informative and entertaining, and I highly recommend it. It's a recommended reading for anybody who wants to know some more details about the posting system now.
And I'm going to throw in a quick shout out to our man CJ Nitkowski, who had also a really insightful blog, I believe, on MLB.com this morning. So, check that out. All right. This morning being Saturday morning, 2 days ago, but see what CJ's got to say because he says some very good things.
Good. Now, we know that the negotiations dragged on until the basic agreement was reached, and it's still dragging on as we move toward the end of it all. I saw a report that it's going to be signed, sealed, and delivered maybe Tuesday or Wednesday here in Japan time, but no
Tuesday.
Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday, but yeah, well, I'll believe it when I see it. Geez, where do we start? You know, MLB and MPB agreed on this thing for players without international free agency, and this is a way for them to jump to the majors. And just to review, the two big changes that we're talking about have guys like Don Nomura. I saw him at the winter meetings. I saw an interview with him. He was smiling grinning from ear to ear because this is going to mean, you know, he can potentially make more money. He's got the potential with the posting fee capped at $20 million and the fact that his players can negotiate with multiple teams now, that means they can suck the money that was going into the posting fee directly into their bank accounts.
Yep.
So,
here's the other thing is what happened was the posting system used to be a one-time sealed bid. Every team put their figures under the table, so to speak, and then the top figure got to negotiate. But now the teams are going to be going, well, they're you know, their bid, they're going to give this guy a $50 million contract for 6 years. We'll give him a $70 million contract for 6 years. These major league teams are not going to save a penny. They're going to still be, they might end up spending more on Tanaka in this system than they would have without it. But what happens is the small market teams will be a little happier because now when teams spend $100 million on a Japanese pitcher, $80 million will be counted against the luxury tax cap, the luxury tax limit.
Right.
Instead of just $50
million. Right. Which is good, which is, you know, like you said, it's going to help these small market teams.
It's good for MLB. Everything about this deal is good for MLB.
Yeah.
Except I think what the small market teams really want is basically a draft where they can just pick the Japanese players and pay a set price for whoever they want. And the Japanese teams will just have to take it and lump it. I think that's coming next. I'm serious. This is what happened.
I agree.
This is how the majors treated the minor leagues.
Yeah.
Which is, take it or leave it.
Yeah. Now this cap means that no matter how good a player you have here in Japan and no matter how much you think his value is, that it's limited. And that means that these Japanese teams here, the owners, really don't see a merit or don't see a value to posting some of their big stars who are obviously big draws.
Right. That's exactly the problem. Now this is a deal for 3 years, it seems. Originally we were talking 2 years, but apparently, and that was basically the 2 years until the collective bargaining agreement between MLB and its union expired, at which point it could be renegotiated. But anyway, apparently this is for 3 years. And now what this means is you're not going to see deals like Tanaka got last year, where there was a gentleman's agreement that he would be posted.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to see that because teams are not going to get their money back.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree.
So essentially, this is a tax that is going to cost MLB in the end.
And I agree with that. And I was thinking the other day, I thought, okay, well, you need 9 years for international free agency. What if a guy wants to be like somebody comes along, they're really good, they're really productive, and the guy says, okay, if I have a good sixth year here with the club, will you post me after the sixth season? And there's just no value for the team to say, yeah, we'll let you go for $20 million.
We will consider it. You know, they always said they're considerate, but given the climate of the posting system, and I think this is going to be Rakuten's discussion with Tanaka. If you're listening to this on Monday in Japan or Sunday in the United States, Yozo Tachibana, the president of Rakuten, is scheduled to meet with Tanaka here on Monday in Japan. That's the word. And essentially, I think the club's position is, yes, we made an agreement, but please understand the agreement we based was on getting fair value for you in return.
Well,
and they will try to persuade him using that logic. Now, what they could do is say, look, we would like to accede to your wishes, and we will absolutely, you know, they could make a deal such as, we're going to give you all of your next 2 years' salary, regardless what happens, and post you at the end of the 2014 season, if you stay with us this year.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, they have options, obviously. They don't have to throw it in. But I just, you know, and I'm sure Tachibana is at the winter meetings. I saw a couple of interviews, even one that he did with a little English mixed in. He was getting questioned by some of the media over there.
Right.
And I'm sure he's just biting his lower lip and you know, almost until the point where it's going to start bleeding soon, because I really think they're caught between a rock and a hard place. They really want to let him go because they really obviously understand he's got nothing left to prove here.
Hmm.
But do they see
and
that?
And the fans, and as an NPB official, an official with an NPB team told me recently, there is pressure, there is a kind of public sentiment. I think the fans, Think of how this has changed in the last 9 years since Hideo Nomo. The fans are now eager for the Japanese stars to go over there because it says a lot about Japanese baseball.
Exactly.
And these guys are no longer traitors. They're now heroes.
Because
actually, Nomo was always a hero to the fans. He was always a traitor to NPB until he became a star. Now he's their poster boy. now this guy they were kicking in the street, you know, they dusted him off and say, look how great we are.
Yeah. Well, let's backtrack a little bit too now. When this posting system was going down, I emailed you and we considered doing a show a week ago and making that the last one of the year because we, you know, the news was breaking. It was the hot topic. And of course we had that basic agreement in place and we saw the new changes that were going down. But you didn't have time and we weren't able to do it. So now it's a week later and we still don't have this thing signed, sealed. Like you said, it's supposed to be Tuesday here in Japan. That would be Monday in the States. We'll have to see if it gets done.
It's going
to
happen. Yeah. I think there's no way it's going to be. I don't hope for a chaos and mayhem and bodily harm, but something that would bring the owners to their senses and say, look, what are we getting into? Now, having said that, this is a great deal if you're any player in NPB.
Yes.
And it's a good deal if you're a team. Well, it's a decent deal if you're a Japanese team and your players are not superstars.
Yeah, and why don't you explain why? Because obviously, well, Patrick did write this on his conversation with my brain post. But,
sure.
But go ahead.
Conversation with his brain.
I'm quoting. Because my brain is nowhere near his.
Well, don't sell yourself short, man.
Oh, okay. I'll let someone else do it.
That's what you pay me for, man.
I didn't say who.
Okay. So anyway, it's a great deal because in the past we had, you know, the two biggest cases were Hisashi Iwakuma in 2011 and Hiroyuki Nakajima in 2012. The teams that won the posting bid for them.
Mm-hmm.
Did not come to terms with on a contract, so they went back to Japan, which cost the Japanese teams their posting fee. Of course, they got another year of the player in Iwakuma's place. It was a lost year. He was hurt most of the year. And, you know, but I'll tell you, it cost the Eagles because they didn't get the posting fee.
Right.
The A's probably wish they had him under contract to have a rotten injured year so they'd have the Iwakuma now.
Right.
For nothing. I mean, it would have been a steal. You know, it would have been a steal for them to get the price they wanted.
Right.
The Yankees and Nakajima is another story. They won the bid almost like they put in a bid because they had to put in a bid and they were shocked that they won it, didn't know what to do with it.
Mm.
So, there was disappointment and hurt and anger. Now, the new system will allow Japanese teams to set a cap up to $20 million. They can't say we want $40 million. But if they say, you know, give us $7 million and we'll let you have this guy, every major league team that puts up a $7 million bid, that bids what the team wants, can negotiate with the player. He is essentially a limited free agent.
Right.
Now, the good thing, again, this is a rule that kills the Japanese team, except that the players are certainly to go now. It kills them because it allows MLB clubs to save the excess value on overbidding.
Yeah.
You know, so they have.
So now you're admitting that they overbid, because last time you said that was a market price, but now you're saying they're overbid.
No. I'm saying that it is the market price, but what they're doing is trimming the fat off the market price. The market price is what people are willing to pay. But basically what they're saying is, you know, if you have a market where the sellers know what the buyers know what the sellers will accept. It's not exactly a free market. You know, there's no compromise between what A wants and what B wants. It's only what the seller will accept, the minimum that the seller will accept. So there's no give and take on the upside.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trimming the fat off of that.
All right.
And
you say
so it is
fat,
the market price. It's just, it's a slanted market. But anyway, moving along. So that'll help the Japanese teams with the low level free agents where they're not going to see a lot of money anyway. You know, the difference between maybe getting $8 million for their best player and getting $6 million for their best player. It's not a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
If Shohei Ohtani turns into a superstar in the next 2 years, I can guarantee you the fighters are probably already talking with Ohtani and saying, look, you know, the system we agreed to ain't the system that is, because I'm sure they were talking about posting him when they signed him.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, what I was thinking mainly was the fact that, and I think Patrick mentioned this in his post, that, you know, not too many guys have gotten more than $20 million, have fetched more than $20 million as a posting fee.
Right.
And so that, and what you said a moment ago about not the superstar players, but some of the players who think they're good enough to play over there and who want to make a jump over to the States, this is going to help them.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was thinking more along those lines.
Right. And I think it's good. It's good for the balance, and it's great for MLB, because then these guys, for the small guys, it's great. It doesn't really matter much for MLB for the small guys, because these are guys that, some of them are going to be better than replacement players, and some of them aren't. Some of them are going to be replacement players.
Right.
Okay. So in which case they're probably overbidding, but you know, they have an upside that maybe minor leaguers don't have, because if they do make the adjustments and play really well, they could be big steals. You know, they could be the next Takashi Saito.
Right. Yeah.
But, so they have an upside, and I guess they're paying for that. But, for the middling guys, sure. There's an advantage to be had for the system, but basically it's a case of man up MPB. I mean, it's like, I have to think, You were talking about kind of a rope-a-dope?
Oh, well, yeah, I mentioned that earlier. I'm sorry, I'm just going to talk about that later. But, here's the thing is, you know, I know that it's going to benefit the players to be able to negotiate with multiple teams, but I think that's going to slow the process unless the guy has a real destination in mind. You know, if a guy wants to play for Seattle and some teams come out there with some similar offers, then he can choose the place that he'd rather go. And I wrote a blog post, I think it was about a week ago, and I said, look, here are some great destinations for Masahiro Tanaka. San Francisco is one, because that team has a great pitching staff. He's going to be able to learn from some guys who are real pros in terms of pitching. He's going to be able to get better. And
got Bogey there too.
And so Vogelsong is
Japanese
there.
And Hensley Mullins is there and knows Japanese ball.
Baseball, yeah. I thought that was a good location for him. I thought Seattle, because Seattle is always, since Ichiro went over there and established that Japanese presence with the Japanese community there, that they are really receptive. They've had a history with the Japanese players and success. And of course the park is really a pitcher's park.
On the other hand, given the news coming out of Seattle this past week, how many millions of dollars do you want to live in a madhouse?
Well, there's not going to be much money left with all the money they're giving to Cano anyway. So maybe that's out, but, and then I thought obviously Los Angeles, the Angels and the Dodgers, and then of course the Yankees, but I didn't mention Boston. And I mentioned that during the chat with Patrick. And just because I just think that they're leery in terms of going after another Japanese pitcher and spending a lot of money to get some piece that they're not sure how it's gonna react. But in terms of the owners now and how Japan might view this thing, I just think it's utterly preposterous that MLB thinks it could come in and scoop the cream of the crop out of NPB and at discount rates. And
just walk away like nothing's going to happen. Well, this is, this is, as you said, I think that's preposterous.
And I grasp the concept of the Japanese team saying, hey, look, you know what? If we don't post the guys, we can get the player, we can get that value, whatever their production is. We can get it for 9 years. Then they'll walk away. We won't get any compensation per se. But that's the worst case scenario, is you get the player for 9 years. And who wouldn't want that? But the whole thing for me, it just seemed like MLB was the big brother in the room in the negotiations, pushing around the little brother NPB, and that they were spineless. And you look at the owners, and you have to think that the owners didn't want this, but, I don't know who was doing the negotiations for NPB, if it was owner related. You know, I started to think of how many players have been posted from some of Japan's elite teams, like the Giants.
None.
Exactly. So who would this benefit if some of the players are not posted? I couldn't put together a money trail, you know. I couldn't say, okay, well, if some of these elite players are not posted, who does it benefit? I guess it benefits the team that has the great player. But the Giants don't post their great players.
They do not. And here's the thing. The Giants are – the Giants and their chairman, Tsuneo Watanabe, who used to be the owner until he resigned over a scandal of paying money to amateurs. But because we know that stuff doesn't – although we know that stuff doesn't happen in Japan, the Giants said. They basically – he has said – report. He's the guy who pushed forward free agency in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And the posting system is essentially one of the byproducts of his desire to have free agency, because the Giants team representative, the team Daihyo at that time, I spoke to him when I was still with Yomiuri, interviewed him for a column in which he said basically we had no – when they pushed forward free agency, I believe before the 1994 season, they had no – idea that it was going to be used as a way for Japanese players to go to the majors, because the Japanese owners didn't believe Japanese players were good enough.
We'll pay you all this money, but we don't think anybody else will.
Right. The majors didn't think so either. You know, they thought, well, they can't play here, so who cares? Well, anyway, when Nomo went and disproved everybody, the owners needed some compensation, and Watanabe came out and said, you're a bunch of dirty,
despicable.
Yeah, a bunch of rats. Dirty, despicable, people who are, they're trafficking in human beings.
Mm-hmm.
This is the guy who spends all his money, who spends his company's money purchasing whatever big name player happens to want to play for the Giants.
Right.
You know, he's the principal consumer of playing talent in Japan, but he has a problem. He has a problem with owners who are selling Japanese talent abroad because they can't get money. You know, they can't make a profit because he's made a free market for players within Japan that allows his Japanese players to move to his team.
Right.
And he's ruined, you know, he did. You know, if anything, I don't know if he ruined Japanese baseball, but he certainly changed Japanese baseball and then blames the owners for reacting to it.
Right.
So he would certainly be the one who would be against having, you know, he would want a posting system that prevents any Japanese player except the free agent from going.
Right. So I was sitting around thinking, I said, okay, well, these other teams are the ones that are posting, not the premier team in Japan. So doesn't it make sense that these owners want to keep their best players? And
right.
So as I was thinking, I said, because, you know, the MLB is pushing around the MPB in this room and they're coming out with this posting fee cap, and it just doesn't make sense. And the whole thing just didn't pass the smell test for me. And I mean, the only other thing I could come up with was that this is some kind of a rope-a-dope or Trojan horse strategy or conspiracy by the owners who just plain don't want to post their players. They don't want to have their players be snatched away. And to agree to something that seems kind of crazy is it's a big conspiracy theory on my part, but I don't know.
So you're thinking this is actually a plan to keep the best free agents.
You even said free agency. The best player. It's a way to say, hey, you know what? Now we have a reason not to post you and you're going to play. And then possibly at the end of that eighth year, they'll probably come to those players and say, hey, we'll post you this year, and then you don't have to worry about coming back for that ninth season because we want to get compensation. But we don't even hear about it until after that eighth season.
Yeah, Matsuzaka was posted 2 years early, and Nakajima was posted 2 years early. So yeah, this happens. This is happening, and it's done for a variety of reasons. It's not only about money; it's about loyalty. The thing about Japanese baseball, which is both good and bad, is that loyalty is marketed.
Yes.
Loyalty is marketed to the point where teams cannot improve themselves because they've sold the fans on how loyal they are to their players, that when they try to improve themselves through trades, they look awful
mm.
by essentially saying, well, we didn't actually want this guy. The guy that we've been telling you is the greatest thing since sliced bread mm. is a guy we're better off without.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the way baseball works, and MLB has found that out. And so baseball is marketed that way. Loyalty is a marketing tool here, that they cannot make trades. They cannot improve themselves as normal teams, as normal businesses would. So part of it is loyalty, and part of that is honest, and part of that is just going with the flow.
Mm.
And I think that's part of the thing about posting players is because they deserve it. And I'll be frank. I think, and I'll give another shout out here to Don Nomura, because, you know, long ago, he called the posting system a slave auction. That's when his player, Hisashi Iwakuma, that was before his player, Hisashi Iwakuma failed to reach an agreement with the Oakland A's.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might even have been from the Irabu times, 18 years ago.
Right.
But he called it a slave auction. And right now, we can see that it really is, because when the money was right, NPB teams were happy to put the guys up for auction
mm-hmm.
because there was money to be made. Now that the money is no longer what it was, they're reluctant, which means, what does it tell you if you're Masahiro Tanaka? It means if they want me, it's not because I'm a great player. It's not only because I'm a great player. It's because they feel cheated about my market value that they can recoup from my efforts. Mm-hmm. This is something I think that is a very fundamental flaw with all of baseball, is this idea that, okay, now the teams develop players in one sense that they don't develop players so much as they scout players and put them in situations where those players, you know, they put them with coaches who can help the players develop themselves.
Help the players.
Masahiro Tanaka is not a great pitcher because of Rakuten. He is what he is partly because of Rakuten, and partly because of Katsuya Nomura, and partly because of the Rakuten coaching staff, but just as much because of his own effort.
Yeah, he's a self-made man in some respects. Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody of that quality is the value that Masahiro Tanaka has created is. I'm going to say, well, you know, it's not 100%, but I would say 80 to 90% of that value is his effort and his God-given ability and his God-given ability not to screw it up.
Yeah.
And Rakuten saying, well, we don't think we deserve more of a share for what you've done. Boy, how selfish, you know, and that's the thing. And I think that's where Don Nomura's words really ring true. You know, in a baseball market, Rakuten deserves the money. But in a real life situation, this guy deserves all, you know, he deserves 90% of that value. So I'm torn. I think MLB owners are saying, well, Japanese teams don't deserve it. That's right. But conversely, MLB owners don't deserve the rights that they have.
Well,
this idea that Mike Trout is something the Angels created. Mike Trout, baby.
Yeah.
You know, you guys didn't make him.
Yeah.
Why should you profit from his, you know, from his skills other than what he performs for you in his, in his baseball, going to work every day?
I gotcha. And we're going to have to move along. But yeah, I see the whole thing. I just think that the MPB owners are choking off the process. choking off the process of sending their elite players to the United States or to major leagues just because the player wants to go. But we'll see how it ends up. I mean, we're going to have to see how this impacts. I mean, like Patrick wrote, there haven't been a lot of guys who have fetched that top posting fee price, and we'll have to see how it plays out over the next two seasons and if it changes and how things go through that. And first of all, Masahiro Tanaka has to be posted. There has to be a decision on that, and we'll just see how everything plays out. And I'm sure we'll have our own opinions about it. And
I think the total fee, the total cost, isn't going to change. I think you get. And the other thing is, you know, every team in their right mind is going to say, well, we'll take Masahiro Tanaka for $20 million, but they're not going to be able to hang with the Yankees and Rangers and whatever team that really wants to spend the big bucks.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's not like the small market teams are going to get a fair share.
All I said
they're going to be out of it.
Yeah, I wrote that the small market teams are going to have a place at the table, but the elbows that they're going to be rubbing against are still bigger than theirs, so they're not going to be able
to. Yeah, they're still not going to be able to reach the platter. They're going to go, hey, yeah. Somebody help me up, baby.
And every time they reach a hand out over the table, it's going to get smacked. All right, let's move along. Let's move along and talk about quickly free agency and what the Hawks and Lions have been doing in the offseason here. Now, I like the SoftBank Hawks pickups. They got Lee Dai-ho. They got Dennis.
Well, they still don't technically have
him yet. Okay, they're looking to get him.
And yeah, they're
looks
close.
Like he's gonna
they're
be
very
there.
Close, I heard.
Okay, looks like he's going to be there. Dennis Sarfate.
That's on their wish list.
On their wish list.
And with Brian Wolfe also.
Brian Wolfe and then Jason Standridge.
Standridge is also, I think, very close to re-signing the Hawks.
Okay. So those four could be really good pickups for them. I thought, Kenichi Nakata, who's, a pitcher with the Dragons might be useful for them. And Shinya Tsuruoka, you know, I've never liked the Hawks catchers. I shouldn't say never, but not for a long time have I liked the Hawks catchers. I thought they had solved most of that issue not last year, but 2 years ago by getting Toru Hosokawa.
Yeah, I thought so too. Hosokawa was, he's a very useful catcher, but he's just, he's not going anywhere. His career is kind of stuck and he's a big tough guy and he's a big tough guy. He's a big tough guy.
Yeah, and he doesn't
but
hit
he's not
enough.
He's not a great catcher by any sense of imagination.
No, but I think if they get those six guys, I'm pretty sure three of them for sure. Standridge, I think Wolf, and I think Lee for sure. And then the other ones we'll have to see how they do. I think Nakata could actually be useful in that park too, but.
Well, I think so. And yeah. I think Tsuruoka is a heck of a player.
Yeah, I like him. I like him better than I like the Hawks catchers and some of them in the past. But I still don't see him playing like, let's say, 130 games and being a constant contributor to the offense. But
well, you can't because again, here's the loyalty thing. They're gonna have to play Hosokawa until Hosokawa basically plays himself out of a job.
Well, they're
going to get a fair share to compete, and one of them is going to be the number one, and number is going to be number two. But I'm thinking it's going to be like 70 games and 80 games and 70 games or something.
Yeah, they're probably.
The other thing with the Hawks is they're very deep, and I think they've got guys who are just bursting to come out in the system. And again, the Hawks are a team where if they could trade people, they could. There are guys on the team, for example, they've got their number two guys are not much. They've got frontline stars who are pretty good, and their number two guys aren't much worse. If they could trade the number one guy to fill in a missing piece and let the number two guy play, they'd be well off. But they can't trade them.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, this is a team I picked to finish first in the PL last year, and it ended up finishing fourth. It played its way out of a playoff spot down the stretch. But, getting rid of Willie Mopeña, I think he didn't play much. He didn't really impact their finish or anything. He didn't really do much after that first season. I think he was a little bit – he had some success that first season with them. But, getting rid of him and getting Lee is just a huge – change because you're talking about a guy who's going to play in the field and we know what his production is like.
Yeah, I think the big question with the Hawks is their bullpen so shows no real signs of getting any better.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's obviously the Sarfate pick will help, but again, they're building it up at the front end. I think Wolf and Standridge, and I think Nakata might end up somewhere in there as the long reliever.
I think he can pitch an inning late in the game, but he's a kind of a slow starter as well. So we have to see how they change him. But still, all these guys, they're picking up guys who have some name value because they have put up some numbers before. So
I'm guessing Senga. They're going to try to make Senga the closer, and take some of the pressure off of Mori Fuku, who had that marvelous 2011. So
yeah. Meanwhile, the Lions are going in a different direction in more ways than one. I after last season, and obviously I didn't expect Skipper Watanabe Nabekiu to step down suddenly after they didn't advance, but.
Yeah, now it looks like he had a, you know, he was the only one on the plane with the ejection seat.
Yeah, well, and I really thought he had a vision and he had a plan and obviously they're going in a different direction. So it's going to be difficult to see the vision and the plan for this new team coming up. But I don't understand that team giving Takeya Nakamura Okawari-kun this 2 billion yen, or what is it, about 20 million bucks over 3 years, the top end posting fee price for a contract. I don't see it. I just, the guy played 26 games last year. He got a bum knee, a bum shoulder, and it doesn't get better.
Mind you, he was a bit of an impact player over his last 26 games. But...
Yeah, 26 games does not a season make. And
wow, that's like poetic.
Almost, huh?
And, pretty good. You're getting there, man.
I'm working on it. I'm just trying to be like Jim.
That's, you're going in the wrong direction. You're improving. You gotta strive lower.
I will never reach your stratosphere? Is that what you're saying? That's what I'm hearing.
No, you're setting your sights too high to match me, man.
That's what I'm hearing. Don't even try to come to this level. You're not worthy. That's what I'm hearing.
You're not worthy of the gutter, man.
But, they didn't sign Herman, or they didn't want to give him whatever money
extra,
he wanted.
Apparently an extra year.
Yeah. I'm not sure,
Which so I can understand at his age. I think that's not a bad business decision.
Oh, I agree. I just.
But that's a good business decision if, you're signing Aram Valdiris to a 2 or 3 year contract, a guy who's, 5 years younger.
Mm. And like
but the thing about Herman is that, people with speed, age better than people without speed. And there's no question, he was still lightning when he was 34, but he's slowing down a little bit. People are making adjustments to him, but, he's the kind of guy who can still be effective. He led the league in on base percentage, which has got to be worth something.
And he hit .319. I mean, it's not like he went up. He was on, yep. he was trending up.
They were probably, and of course, guys who are 35 years old who are trending up tend to trend down, but.
I agree. They saw him every day and.
I think that what they saw as well, he's getting caught stealing more often. He isn't very good because that's what people look at, how, his stolen bases and pretty much leave it at that.
Well, I really had, as I watched that team last season, I kept saying, and I said to Randy Williams, this team is really built to win next year. It's really going to compete. And now I'm watching and I'm not seeing the kind of, obviously with the skipper going, but, we've had this thing with first year skippers doing well, but I just don't know.
Well, first of all, he ain't a first year skipper.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Now, the original talk with the Lions made perfect sense, which was promote the farm team manager. This is as I talked about before, this is a very workable strategy.
Okay.
It's a very workable tactic. It pays off. I would say it pays off 90% of the time. But, provided provided he's qualified.
Yeah.
Bringing in Ihara, who is a former teammate of the Giants head of the Lions head of baseball operations, Haruhiko Suzuki,
mm-hmm.
Is just a mystifying move. And when I see all the foreigners leaving, when I see the foreigners offered contracts and not calling back, what I see is the same thing that happened to Yakult in 2007. When Atsuya Furuta quit, now Atsuya Furuta, like Watanabe, was a very player's manager. If you were mature and you competed, he was your guy and he treated the foreigners well. Well, all of a sudden they've changed from this humanist, good natured, not a push around, but a good natured guy to Ihara, who is a head coach, which means he's a hard ass. He's a drill sergeant. Who has alienated every team he has alienated since he left. Since he stopped being a head coach for the Lions a couple of decades ago, he's basically alienated every group of players he's been associated with, both as a Lions manager, as Oryx manager, as Giants head coach. Right. So now he's going to come back and alienate whoever's left at Saban. Now he's going to as I said before, you know, he deserves credit for the decision of taking a guy who had no real role on the team and turning him into a star. Kazuhiro Wada became an MVP and a multiple best nine winner, you know, by saying this guy's a good player. So, okay. You know, he's a smart guy, a talented guy, but he's really obsessed with doing things a certain way. It happens to older managers, and he was an older manager when he was young.
All right, well, that's something to keep an eye on. I didn't say he was first time manager. I just said he was new. He's back.
Okay.
Let's go to our last section of the season, actually of the year.
Wow! Drum roll, please.
Boom, boom, boom. And this is something we haven't done before, but I wanted to know what your top five moments or memories were from this past season, starting from number five and counting down to number one.
Okay, number five is Takuya Furuya, making this bizarre breakthrough from the reliever nobody wanted to a middle reliever nobody wanted to the best pitcher on the Lotte Marines. You know, I think he's going to write a book, How I Went From Nowhere to No-No in 12 Easy Steps.
Yeah,
he did throw a no-hitter. He threw his first game this year. He retired the first 26 batters he faced, and it took him 28 to complete his one hitter. But he did throw a no hitter in the Eastern League. He was the best pitcher in the Eastern League this season, and he turned around and became one of the best pitchers in the Pacific League this season.
All right. My number five is, Daisuke Yamai of the Chunichi Dragons, and him finally getting his no hitter. He was the pitcher who was on the mound for 8 perfect innings in the 2007 Japan series and had a blister and was removed from the game and wasn't able to finish the perfect game on his own. And Hitoki Iwase came on and threw the 9th inning and completed a combined no-hitter. So it was good to see him actually get that no-no.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I'll grant you that.
Your number four?
Number four. The Hiroshima Carp making the playoffs and sweeping Hanshin in their first two games.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. That's a nice one. My number four is the Fighters, Shohei Ohtani getting his first start as a pitcher. And just the impact of that game, and, you know, it was a must-see game. It was a night a lot of people were talking about, and just conjured up a lot of good memories. Your number three?
My number three is also Shohei Ohtani. And what my memory is, the fact that this guy who was a pitcher who was playing as a kind of an experiment, it seemed almost on a whim, was a very good hitter. I mean, he was a remarkably good hitter for a 19-year-old player at any position. Well, he was an 18 when he started, but for a player that age, at any position, to hit as well as he did is remarkable. The players who have hit as well as he did, who weren't trying to pitch at the same time, most of them are in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I remember you saying that.
So I was pretty amazed that this guy is a legitimate hitter, and I would think, so that to me was a really big thing.
My number three is Alex Ramirez of the Yokohama Bay Stars getting his 2,000th hit with a homer at his old ballpark. Jingu Stadium, off a pitcher he, you know, obviously played behind at one time.
His former teammate,
So yeah, it was a great moment for him in the rain. I mean, it was just a beautiful moment for him. So I was real happy to see that go down. Your number two.
Yeah. Okay. Number two. Coco Ballantyne's record home run.
So number 56?
Number 56. Number 55 is a superb season. You're up there in the stratosphere, but 56 is where no man has ever gone before in Japan.
Hmm.
So that was, to me, was such a breakthrough. And so, you know, we all knew it was coming, but you don't know when. So
yeah.
It was such a great moment.
My number two is also Coco Ballantyne, but I'm in fact, my number two and my number one are combined moments from the same player.
Asterisk time.
Yeah. It's blast number 55 to tie the record and then number 56 to break the single season home run record. And, you know, being in the park for both of those was very fun, although I was late to the party on number 56, but I was at the park and got to, enjoy the atmosphere. So that was
one. Well, we made up for that. We sort of did a double. I was late for 55. I was at the park after he hit it. And then, And then I was there for the whole 56. So between us, we had it covered.
All right. You're number one.
Number one. The consensus number one. And the unanimous MVP and champion of the world, Masahiro Tanaka. Okay. Now, for me, I had a lot of trouble picking this or Valentin or... But I think the history here is that Tanaka in high school was sort of like the second banana. He was like the best player of his generation in high school, but he didn't win the big prize at the final bell.
Mm-hmm.
Pitched his heart out and lost in the second final. I think 1-0. The second final of the National Summer High School Baseball Championships. To some guy who's playing in the minor leagues now. And this time he came up, he had the perfect 24-0 regular season. He hasn't lost since I came to Japan, I think. And then he finishes that by suffering his first loss in a 160-pitch game. Great game. And he comes back and beats the Giants the next day. And the Eagles beat the Giants.
He didn't beat the Giants, but...
No, he didn't. He
closed
lost,
out, yeah.
He lost the 160-pitch game, but he came back and sealed the game
right,
as the Eagles beat the Giants. Yeah. That sounds... that the Eagles beat the Giants. We're not talking NFL here, but that has a nice ring to it.
I like that. The Eagles beating the Giants in the NFL, too. Yeah, my number one moment, and yeah, obviously he did lose that high school game to the handkerchief salesman, we'll call him now. The Eagles, Masahiro Tanaka, getting victory number 24 and then finishing off the league title and then finishing off the Climax Series and then finishing off the Japan Series. All those moments with him on the mound for me were the biggest moments of the season. So it was a great 2013, lots of records, lots of memories, and lots of fun.
Yeah, brilliant. And, wonderful, wonderful season.
And have lots of fun doing the show with you and looking forward to doing it again next year.
Yeah, starting bright and early in January, you know, when we get really cold.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty frosty out there. We will be back.
In the meantime, John Gibson's going to be vacationing in sunny Southern California. Good man.
And hopefully, literally, running his butt off since it has grown.
Well, good luck with that.
All right, so everyone, we'll see you next year. Have a happy, happy holiday, and send your emails and MP3s and comments to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we will talk to you next year.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!